Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian in the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in.
Yes,
look,
sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. Positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you the message. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down relationships to the third degree.
This is the Bree life,
what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics and race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life,
what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Peace and blessings. It's your girl, Bree, and you have reached the Bree Life Radio Show, where we exercise peripheral thought to promote provocative dialogue. Tonight, we have a great discussion lined up for you. It's, I think, at this time of the year, a much-needed discussion. Tonight, we'll be discussing healing for the holidays. We all know at this time of the year, we all deal with the greatest challenge of keeping our spirits up when dealing with lack of resources, death, broken relationships with family and friends. And it's just necessary that we provide some type of outreach to our community at large, because we are our brother's keeper. That's why we're having a discussion tonight. Tonight we'll be joined by several professionals in the area of human services, domestic violence, and mental health. Our first guest will be Bari Schneider. She is the Assistant Deputy Director of the Human Resources Administration here in New York City. We'll also be joined with author Harriet Holland, who happens to be the founder and program director for HEAL. Heal. And we'll also be joined with Diana Alley, who is a social worker. She's also a domestic violence and community activist. I think it's wonderful for the first time, and a lot of my listeners, which I just want to thank you all in advance before the show kicks off. We've reached an unprecedented number of listeners for the month of October. So I just want to thank you in advance for everyone's support for listening to the show. I'm glad that you are enjoying the topics. I'm glad you're enjoying Freestyle Thursdays. I appreciate all of the emails and the text messages and the instant messages on Facebook and Twitter that I get. But I also think it's wonderful that for the first time in the history of the Bree Life Radio Show that I have and am receiving so much sisterly love and support for a show topic, you know, that in advance I just would like to say for a heartfelt thank you, thank you, thank you. But without further ado, I want to introduce my co-host and sister at arms, Red.
Hello.
Because we're going into such a heavy topic, I just wanted to do something lighthearted and introduce you, Red. This is Red Sable for all the listeners that are tuning in for the first time, and, you know, for the ones who know, this is my sister at arms, Bloodfire Hot Red.
Thank you for the warm welcome. I do appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. I don't want to complain. I really don't, because some people lost a lot and they don't have anything right now. But it is so hot in my apartment. I don't know what they're trying to tell us, but the heat in here is ridiculous. I can't even think straight. It is so hot in here.
Well, unfortunately, this is a hot topic, and I think you're about to burn the heck up, Red. So, you know, I want to know, just because this is a topic that is very near and dear to my own heart. The holidays are not really a very good time of the year for me, as I have openly expressed on the show. I lost my father 10 years ago. He was my best friend. I look just like him. I have a lot of his mannerisms. He taught me how to shoot pool and play chess, and he taught me a lot that there was to know about boys and what I should look out for. And, you know, I just miss having conversations with him. You know, people never really understood and often stood on the sidelines of watching me and him talk, because he would talk every day, three times a day. And they were like, what are they talking about? You know? So this time of the year, it's like, and I know that this is not a new topic or something that is foreign to a lot of people. I know many people who have lost their parents. I know people who have lost children around this time of the year, or any time of the year. To lose a child is a very challenging and heart-wrenching thing. And this is the time of the year where, as most of you know, I worked in healthcare for a handful of years, and part of one of the things that I used to do working in the hospital, I was working in the mental, in the psych ward, and this time of the year, the emergency rooms, which is another area of the hospital that I worked in, to see people come in and so despaired and willing to take their own lives because they're extremely depressed about the condition that their life is in. And that is what the basis of this show is about. And for all those people who have not only or are not only going through that as they're facing the holidays, but those who have taken their lives because of being so deeply depressed because of their condition, I dedicate this show to them. I also dedicate the show to those who are in the midst of broken relationships with family members that are dealing with family dysfunction, currently brokenhearted because recent breakups or facing breakups with a spouse or a partner. This is, you know, for a time of the year that is supposed to promote goodwill towards man and just, you know, fellowship and being with your family. It can be also a very anxious time of the year for certain people. I know that this is not my favorite time of the year because there's also family members that, and a part of the show that we're also going to be discussing probably in our second hour is, you know, in order to heal, you have to forgive. You have to acknowledge your pain, and you have to forgive and let go. And there are several family members, people who I'm related to, which, you know, you've heard me say it, the listeners have heard me say it, that I am not a person that considers someone a family member because I share DNA with them. because mm-hmm. there are lots of family members. Well, not lots, I'm sorry. There are certain family members in particular that I share DNA with that I don't want to have anything to do with because they did specific things to me. But here's the good news about that. I've learned to forgive and let go. And that is a part of my healing. And, you know, and that's what I want to share with our audience tonight. That we have to forgive and genuinely forgive, because until we free ourselves from being a hostage of guilt and fear and bad feelings toward a person or a family member or whatever, we are never going to be able to move past our condition. So what say you on that, Red?
I agree. I do want to say that I lost between 2009, right before Michael Jackson died, and the early part of 2011, I lost 12 family members. And some of them died right before Thanksgiving and Christmas. I lost my mother when I was 21, my father when I was 18, so I was already an orphan. So when I finally got reconnected with some family members, it was just a bunch of just cousins and my mother's first cousins and my aunts. And unfortunately, those left me. They died as well. So I'm pretty much an orphan in this world. I do have family that I do consider family that I am very close to, and mm-hmm. I have a couple of aunts that are left that are on my father's side that I am very close to, but most of the people on my mom's side are no longer here. So this time of year is very difficult for me and my siblings because we're dealing with a bunch of different issues regarding upbringing and this time of year and not having our mother around or our father. And so it's a very difficult time, for lack of a better word. Challenging is a better word. It's a more challenging time of year for us. So although we've gone on to have our own children and have our families, there's a huge part of our root and our core that's gone. So it's very challenging at this time of year to try to put on a brave face and go out in the world and act as if you're still whole when there's parts of you that's broken. So I definitely believe that unless you are able to heal and forgive and move forward and process what has happened to you and put it in perspective and become more positive with what has happened to you, then you won't be able to move forward. And I do have a couple of siblings that hang on to a lot of bad things that had happened and won't let go, so they are stuck in a time zone. And so it's unfortunate for them, but then I have, there's five of us, so. Uh-huh. There are half of us are good, and the other half of us need help. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you specifically about your own acknowledgement of your pain and the process that you went through, and maybe that you deal with every day, like myself, of healing, because it's a daily process. Because you know, we never forget the things that happen to us. That's the reality. But we can choose to empower ourselves from that pain and do positive things to, you know, take the energy back from the bad event and turn that energy into something positive and worthwhile that will benefit other people. That's what the whole concept of Bree Life Radio was mm-hmm. on from. So let me ask you personally, how have you been able to move on, you know, with some of the things that you've been challenged with emotionally? And
So for me, the way I was able to get through a lot of it is I threw my time. I became a single parent. So I threw a lot of my energy into my kids, and I kept them away from a lot of different situations. when I as I got older and was forced to have to protect myself against someone who claimed that they loved me, I had to then go through a whole nother realm of challenging arrangements that were not, that I never thought I would have to go through because of the way that I grew up. You always think, oh, it's never going to happen to me because I'm never going to allow this, I'm never going to allow that, and the second I find out, I'm going to make a change. You don't know what the hell is going to happen to you until it happens to you, on how you're going to react to it. So once I was able to find my way out of the hole that I was in, I then focused on my kids and trying to raise them in an environment where they would not have to see such pain. And yes, they did ask about certain family members and where was their grandmother and things like that. They did. But I compensated for that by introducing us to other family members that were around. So their traditions became our traditions. So that's how I was able to adapt. I was able to focus my energies on that. And again, I think I mentioned several weeks ago or so that I also went into counseling for many years. And then I became a counselor myself for crisis women in crisis. And that helped me too. I found that helping others truly helped me because I did not have to focus so much on what I was going through. So it did help me to help others. So that's basically how I did it. It is not to say that I am completely healed, because none of us are. Once you go into a situation where you have had to protect yourself in whatever manner, for whatever the circumstances are, once you come through that, you are always going to carry pieces of that with you, and you are never going to forget, and you are always going to have to heal from that, because there was always something that's going to trigger. It could be a song, it could be a smell, it could be a food, it could be something someone said to you, and they have nothing to do with it. They don't even have to know you. But it was certain ways they looked at you, or certain outfit that someone wore, or a certain color. There's all kinds of triggers that will remind you that you're still in pain and you're still healing.
But that is a part. That's a part of coping with trauma. And when you talk about triggers, you are pretty much defining or giving a brief description of what dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder usually stems from. And most of us who have had some trauma in our life is challenged with that. And when we're behaving in a certain manner, which you were on the call last night when we were on our extra, Relationship Extra, which is also on the Bree Life Radio Network on Tuesdays, airing at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we would talk, a caller called in, and he clearly identified that people have certain behaviors because of the trauma that they experienced, and he defined pretty much, in short, what post-traumatic stress disorder really is. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to bring on Barry Schneider, who happens to be the assistant deputy director of at the Department of Human Resources Administration here in New York City. And she's also going to bring us up to date on the events that have led us to where we are today, and with the storm efforts that the Human Resource Administration are trying to provide support to those who have been displaced here in New York City. So we'll be bringing her on in a moment, but right now we're going to take a brief break. Please hold on.
Bree Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Bree Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Bree Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at brilife.evenbright.com. That's brilife.evenbright.com.
And we're back. You are listening to the Bree Life Radio Show. Tonight, our discussion is on healing for the holidays. I'm joined with my co-host, Red Sable. And now we are going to bring on our first guest panelist. She is the Assistant Deputy Director of the Human Resources Administration here in New York City. And her name is Barry Schneider. Peace and blessings, Barry.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm tired.
I know you are, and that's why when we were talking earlier, I told you I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, you know, in lieu of the fact that you've probably been up for the last almost 3 days straight dealing with this Hurricane Sandy and the result of its aftermath and dealing with all the people that have been displaced. But, you know, again, I want to thank you. I want to introduce you to my co-host, Red. What I'd like to do right now is, if you could, just for our listeners, introduce yourself, tell us what you do for the HRA, and give us a little update about the effects of the storm and where we are right now in terms of all the displaced people.
Well, my name is Barry Schneider. I've been working with Department of Social Services Human Resources for the last 25 years. I've spent 24 years in the center, and within the last year, I was promoted to Assistant Deputy Director for the Assistance Reimbursement Unit, which is still a branch of HRA. Mm. Today was my first day actually going back to work, and this was my first experience working in a hurricane evacuation shelter.
Wow. And can you tell us what that is like? What is this shelter? Because, you know, I was talking to Diane, who will be joining us shortly, and she said it so very clearly that the word shelter has such a negative connotation to it.
It really does. It's
so
true.
Could you just clearly define for us what the environment, the current environment of the shelters are like right now, especially for those who have had to evacuate and are currently staying in the shelters? What does that whole environment look like? And how are the spirits of the people?
Well, the majority of the shelters are schools. So the school that I went to was within my neighborhood, which is in East New York.
Mm-hmm.
The setup is just like a school. They just clear out the gym, and you see cots, you see families, you have the lunchroom set up. It's not a pleasant place to be, and you can tell by the participants that they're not happy where they're at. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
I was sad.
Really?
Because you had people who have lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they
don't
know
where
to turn.
They
don't know where
to turn. All over, or are they from a specific area?
Coming from different places. You had people that came from Canarsie, Coney
mm-hmm.
Island. You had people who just was there because their lights were out. You had people who lost everything.
Mm.
Yeah,
now,
kids.
This is really going to add to the dynamic of the discussion that we're having tonight, because healing for the holidays, now people, all of these hundreds of thousands of people are displaced, and they're displaced at the worst time of the year.
Yes.
So can you tell us, are there any efforts being made for anything that's being put in place for these people who are now displaced in the shelter? Are there any social workers that have specialties in mental health, any counselors talking to these people? Because I'm quite sure there are some people who are there sobbing and very sorrowful, especially when you lose your home, you lose everything.
Yes, and they had mental health counselors in place. They had a doctor at the shelter that I was at.
Mm-hmm. Now, the demographic of people that are there, it's made up of a bunch of ethnicities, or, you know, do you find that because of a particular area, there's, you know, a larger number?
From what I heard earlier before I got there, they had all ethnicities. You had Russians,
mm-hmm.
you had blacks, you have Spanish. There's no, it doesn't matter. It's where the person is can get to.
Right.
You had a person who was from the Bronx who got caught in the storm in Brooklyn.
Oh, gosh. Mm. Well, our hearts really, really go out to these people. I mean, I was home here watching it on television, and, you know, it's so sad, and I'm just thinking back to the storm that we had last summer, and I'm saying this storm was worse than last summer's storm, and at the time I was living in Long Island, and the destruction and the displacement of people out there, you know, but and you never think when you live in New York City these things will happen.
You
but,
never can say never now. Nobody
exactly. So let me ask you, the topic we're talking about is healing for the holidays. And as you've shared with us, you've worked for the HRA for over 25 years now.
Yes.
Tell us the types of situations around this particular time of year that you can tap into from your memories that you've encountered that were just very heart-wrenching in terms of people being so despaired about their condition. Because, you know, as we all know, being on public assistance and, you know, it's a safety net, but it's not really, it's not the greatest way of life for people. And as you could tell me better than what I know, because, you know, because of the circumstances of our socioeconomic climate, where there aren't a lot of jobs available. There isn't enough affordable housing available, and things as such. Can you just speak to what you have encountered over the many years that you've worked at the HRA, and especially speak to the memories that you have around this type of year, things that, you know, you could share with us with people that are going through hard times?
Well, you find that this time of year you have people having problems with their rent. So they're coming in, like, at the last minute for help to prevent themselves from being evicted. And a lot of times I've found it's the person who's sitting in the chair that you're dealing with. Because not only are we there to help, we're like their shoulder for them to cry out on. And you find sometimes that all they want to do is talk just to get their problems off.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised. You get a thank you at the end of your day. You made my day. Or, you know, I've talked to, I've always had a good rapport with the public, and they always might slip me a note and say, thank you, Ms. Snyder. You really helped me.
Right. Because, you know, as you know better than I do, but I've also heard, and it's unfortunate that there is such a disdain for social workers and HRA specialists here in New York City.
It's a hard job, and you always hear, you know, the workers are so nasty. But I always say, in the days that we're living now, I could be on the other side at any given moment. So you have to always remember how you talk to people. Because you never know what's behind the smile. Like I always post, like on my Facebook page, at the end, keep smiling. You never know what's behind somebody's smile. And you never know when, if you're mean to someone, that same person might be the one that you'll rely on for help.
This is so true. It's so very true.
Today, you know, I posted on my Facebook page my experience today, but I put a quote up on my page, and it says, a person's most useful asset is not the head full of knowledge, but a heart full of love, an ear ready to listen, and a hand willing to help. And we have to help. We have to help each other.
We are a brother's keeper, you know. And I put that on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, the other day when I was thanking my friends and my neighbors that call and stop by with bags of you know, canned goods and bread. And the lady that, you know, lives next door to us, she brought a bag of batteries over and a flashlight. And you know, I thought that was so kind because especially like my friends that I grew up in Crown Heights with know that I've returned to the community. And they know my mother is in her 70s now and, you know, she's a heart patient and she has neurological issues. And we're concerned, should this storm really be bad? I mean, you know, Crown Heights, we on the hill. It used to be called Crow Hill. So we're on the hill. So we don't really experience flooding like other low-lying surrounding areas. But
I'm in East New York, but five, six blocks down from me, those folks have gotten flooded. Yeah, in Canard.
Yes. Exactly. So, you know, I'll say, and, you know, this is just synonymous with what you said with the with your quotation, that we have to look out for one another. We have to lend a helping hand and a compassionate ear. You know, sometimes a person just needs an embrace, a smile. I'm sure that, you know, some of my listeners and, you know, people who follow me on Twitter and Facebook, they have seen that, you know, I put a weekly challenge out to everyone that sometimes, you know, could you just stop what you're doing for 5 minutes, call somebody you haven't talked to in a long time, and just say, I was thinking about you.
Thinking
I
about
love
you.
Right. You know, and our brothers, we are our brother's keeper.
Yes.
And I just want to turn it over to Red. Red, do you have anything that you'd like to ask Barry?
I just want to just offer a little bit of, because I've been on both sides.
Yeah.
And I have actually been in situations where I was completely disrespected by the person that's supposed to help me.
That's
and
true.
So, that I wish there were more people like you sitting behind the desk who had that will of humanity to want to do better because it's in your heart to do that. Unfortunately, the reality is that it's just not so. There are way too many people sitting behind the desk who think that they have some type of power who will treat you with such disrespect because you're coming for help in a moment that you don't even want to come for help, but at a time when you really need to. You don't need to be talked to or talked down at or talked at or over at any given point because you are in a position where you are vulnerable. So I've seen all kinds of things. I've seen fights. I've seen police being called, people being dragged out of the place because of the way they were being treated. I've seen all kinds of situations. I have family members that do work. Actually, I have a cousin who works at the Brooklyn Downtown Brooklyn food stamp office, and she the stories that she tells me is unbelievable. And she says that there are some people like you, Ms. Barry.
There are. That's true. Yeah, there are some people.
But it's rare that you meet those type of people. You don't always meet them. You meet the ones who have attitudes because they're working off their check, they had a bad day, they're just miserable. And so because they want to make you miserable too. And it's unfair because that type of behavior leads you to do things that you don't want to do.
That you don't want to do. That's correct.
And you could avoid going into offices like that. So I just wanted to offer my perspective on that part.
That's fine.
Okay. Well, you know what I would like to ask you at this time? For all of our listeners, especially here in New York City, are there any resources in terms of telephone numbers or places where they can go to get any assistance for necessary provisions that they might need if they are in need of a local shelter? You know, should they reach out to
local
311, or do you have any other information that you share with the audience?
They can call 311, and you also have nyc.gov website.
And what will they find on nyc.gov in the ways of resources? What links should they be looking for?
Department of Social Services, Human Resources Administration. And I'm sure they're going to update it for people because there are going to be people in need. Whose food has been spoiled, so we're talking about replacement of food, who need their lights are off, maybe they need help with their bill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll have to call 311.
Okay.
And they will guide them to the closest center where they can get assistance.
Another question that kind of just came across my mind. For those who are displaced and have no place to go, what efforts are being exercised by HRA to help these people find permanent housing to get clothing? Are you also working with other agencies like the Red Cross?
The Red Cross, yes. They're working with Red Cross. And I believe I saw today that people who are totally displaced, they should contact FEMA.
Okay.
For assistance.
Okay. All right.
But HRA is the place to be for food, for cash, for replacement of clothes, Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Because
this
the school shelters, they're only going to be there temporarily. Now, school opens, I'm sure they'll be placed in a permanent shelter, temporary shelter.
Okay.
Through the Department of Homeless Services.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about, because this is sort of synonymous with the concept of healing. What's the feeling going on in the shelter environment right now? I mean, are people in such a despaired state that, you know, they're short patient, they're losing patience with one another? Or are people, kind of banding around and trying to be supportive? What's the feeling like?
You're trying to be supportive. And like I said, some of these workers have been in the shelters since Saturday. This was my first experience. But you have to be supportive to the
right.
people where there's a service.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to make them as comfortable, despite their situation, make them comfortable.
Okay. Well, Barry, I want to thank you again because this was, I just want to let our listeners know that this is a part of sisterhood right here that's going on. Barry, as she has stated, she has been, you know, dealing with the effects of the storm in the shelter system for a couple of days now. She's tired. And I asked her, I reached out to her late last night, and we talked for the first time this afternoon. And she was adamant about being on the show this evening. So this is sisterhood in full effect on the Bree Life Radio Show. And I just want to, you know, thank you on behalf of Bree Life and on behalf of the listeners and behalf of people that don't or maybe have not said thank you, Mrs. Snyder, in the last 25 mm-hmm. years. You know, you must have done something great in order to be acknowledged and promoted. And
absolutely. Congratulations.
And we appreciate
you.
We appreciate all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and continue to share your heart with those that are in need because we really do need better supporters like yourself there for us.
And I always stress we have to do better because you never know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It could be you. It could be me tomorrow.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's right. Well, I know that you're tired. I'm not kicking you off the show if you want to stay on the air for a few minutes and join in to the discussion that we're about to have with other panelists. You're more than welcome.
Okay.
If you feel that, you know, you need to go, we'll certainly understand.
Okay.
What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break, and when we return, we're going to be joined with Aaliyah Holland. I want to correct a mistake that I made earlier. I said her name was Harriet. It is on the Facebook page, but it's Aaliyah Holland, and she is the program director and founder of HEAL. HEAL. So look it up, and she's written several books on the topic, and we're going to be joined with her in a few moments. In addition to Diana Alley, who is a community and domestic violence advocate, and we're going to have this is a great discussion, and I thank everyone for participating. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
It is important for you to get your healthy dose of the Bree Life Radio Show, because when you miss the Bree Life Radio Show, you miss moments like this.
And of course, there's those that get married for holy matrimony. They got married for holding matrimony.
And this.
The reason why a certain group of women attract themselves to internet dating is so that they can lie.
We can't forget about this.
I had a stalker. Had to get an order of protection.
Well, you got a woman that you've been with for 7 years, so you do it. You know what's up, right?
Come on, Bree. Don't stop it.
It's real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light.
So let's take that deep breath in because we're about to go in.
It's the Bree Life Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Catch us at blogtalkradio.com/ Bree Life.
And we're back. This is Bree, and you have joined the Bree Life Radio Show. Tonight, our discussion is on healing for the holidays. And I'm joined with my co-host, Red Sable. And Schneider of the Human Resources Administration here in New York City. Before we bring our next guest on, we have one of our guest co-hosts and my brother at arms in Houston, Texas, Mark, who happens to also have a background and social work. So I want to bring him on and add him into our discussion tonight. Mark, peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings to all of you all. Pre-life show.
Hello, good evening.
Thank you for having me. Hey, what's going on, Red?
And, I'm great. How are you?
What's the Miss Barry? Is that Miss Barry? Is that her name?
Yes, Miss Barry.
Miss Barry, it's been nice listening to you. I've been listening to you, and I kind of understand what you're dealing with because, you know, I worked in shelters down here. Actually, is one of our sister shelters that actually is in New York, which is Covenant House.
Okay.
We're down at Covenant House, Houston, and of course, you know, Houston has been the site of many a tropical storm / hurricane, and
most recent one was
Hurricane Ike, which was really it was bad. Rita wasn't that good, and Katrina had some effect on the area too, but. It's quite interesting to see, you know, an area that is not used to doing that. I can imagine it's crazy because even here, which we can't say we're not accustomed to it, but I tell you, you never get used to it because people always talk about getting used. You don't get used to it. You don't because the displacement. The last time we had Ike, I was personally without power for 17 days. So,
right.
You know, and I was listening to the whole concept of help. I remember we had a hurricane drill at work and we had some training and we were always talking about the fact that what you need to do right now when there's no hurricane is get to know who is next door to you.
Exactly.
Because what we find is, especially because people don't stay on the same blocks for years and years and years any longer like they used to, it's a lot of migrants. We're pretty much our major metropolitan area are areas of migrants. So that means that people are moving in a kind of transient type of population. So what happens is a lot of times you don't know your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And when a really bad catastrophe takes place, it's very important to know your neighbor. You know what I'm saying? Not to mention, you know, having at least a hello and how you doing. It don't mean you have to go in and sit down and have mm-hmm. a conversation with you. If that can happen, that's fine. But many a times we find that, you know, especially during this time, people do looting and they break in and stuff like that. And when you don't know your neighbor, a lot of times they're not going to say anything if they see something going on across. But when they just, if they just are used to saying hello to you, you'd be surprised how far that goes when somebody's trying to do something to your property, you know. And so it's quite interesting to see, you know, what happens in these areas. I was listening to what Red was saying. And I was listening to what Ms. Barry was saying too. The whole social work dynamic is quite interesting because especially during this kind of time and even not during this time, the job is a burnout job.
I'm talking about
people who go in who really care about the job get burnt out because what you see is both sides of you see the good, the bad, and the ugly. Unfortunately, like most of us, it's kind of like a bad relationship. When you have a bad relationship, unfortunately, a lot of times that bad relationship and those experiences stick with you longer than the better times you've had in your relationships. And unfortunately, sometimes they carry on. A lot of the workers, you'd be surprised. We've been spit on. We've been talked about. All kind of stuff happens to us as well. And we still have to keep a certain level of professionalism. And so what happens to some of us is we don't keep that certain level of professionalism. We see the next person as the same person that just spit on us or cursed us out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so the humanity of the job, which is both sides of humanity, meaning the good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good and bad.
That's all part of the human condition. If you have good, bad, and ugly on your block, then you have good, bad, and ugly in those positions. It's just how it is. Yeah. You can't escape that. So to speak.
No.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of stigma on both sides, meaning the people behind the desk have a stigma of the people on the other side, and the people on the other side have a stigma of the people behind the desk. So when you get
automatically
converging, you see it can be a real funky environment. So there's no doubt about it. We all have to be aware of it. And as far as my brother's keeper, I always have a saying that we're not our brother's keeper; we are our brother. So whether we realize or not, when I look at you, I'm looking at myself. And the more I understand that, then the more I can start looking at the issue of compassion. Because if I see you as someone outside of me, then I look at you differently. But if I see you as me, then I got a different relationship with you. Then I'm in a place of empathy. I'm in a place of of sharing and understanding, as opposed to those people, because that's kind of how we do it. We do the those people role, them. And Ms. Berry made a good point. A lot of us who are in the field, because especially the economic downturn and all kind of stuff, we end up receiving those services as well.
That's true.
So,
okay.
But that's
well, you know what I want to ask you, Mark, because you know our topic is healing for the holidays. As a social worker working in a shelter system, I'm sure that you've encountered a lot of emotional distraught about a person's condition. Could you just share with us, you know, especially this time of the year, do you have any particular stories that you can share with us, having worked in the social services area, that you could talk to us about?
Well, what I will tell you is that, because I have many stories, I like to look at more of the general tenor, the general feeling around the holidays. Holidays are crazy because, number one, first of all, by working in retail, I also saw you see the desire to get stuff. Okay, we look at TV, we see the fact that the reality is that retail makes 75% of their money during 3 months. Okay, so whenever you have that kind of push and that kind of economic incentive that's going on between that time, you also have a great deal of pressure. Okay, so now you're looking at people who don't have a whole lot. You have what I call season homeless. And the season homeless, they're a whole different thing, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to find season homeless. Anyone that's usually season homeless or chronic homeless, usually there's mental health issues, no doubt about it. I have never seen anybody that's been chronically homeless that was not mentally ill. I don't even know anybody like that. I understand about situational, circumstantial, but when we talk about 5 years homeless, I can promise you, it's more than that. Because, and it may have not started out that way, but it takes a toll on a lot of people. So during this time of the year, what you're going to find is you're going to find a lot of people who have known the good times, so to speak, and now they're on the bad times. So depression, obviously, unbelievably, it can be off the chart. But you'd be surprised how many of the people who are used to dealing with the system and used to being homeless, they're kind of ambivalent to this stuff. It's the more recent people. Like, for instance, when you see people who I've met who have had it on, they were on Easy Street. And especially down here for a while, when we had some problems in the Gulf, and because it's a big petrochemical area, when the petrochemical field gets affected, people lose those quote unquote good paying jobs. Because when you're out there on the oil rigs, you get paid you could be getting paid $24 an hour. You know, and that's for the average citizen, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, so then you go for $24 an hour to unemployed and not able to even, you know, do any of that stuff. You got houses depending on it. You have cars depending on it. So then you snatch that stuff from other people, and then you want to see mental health issues. You can find out how stable people are when you start taking their dear things away from them. And now you get to a time of the year where they can't provide these extra things. You know, they can't go to the extra concert because so and so is in town. Because, you know, this, think about between November and January 1st, all the activity that's going on. You know, all the hustle bustle from the money to concerts to various other club events and so forth and so on. And now you've been used to that. So what we find is, we find a lot of people really depressed. Depression is the biggest thing, and that comes, and you will see people who basically shut down.
I want to stop you there, Mark, because that's a perfect segue to the next guest panelist that I'll be bringing on. Her name is Aaliyah Holland. She is the founder and program director of HEAL. Here in New York, and we're going to bring her on right now. Aaliyah?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Peace and blessings.
Hi, peace and blessings. Yeah, it's called the Heal Network. How's everything?
So tell us about the Heal Network, because that's what we're talking about tonight, and that's what we need to do, and we need to help.
Well, my middle name is Harriet Tubman.
Okay.
And so when you said Harriet Holland, I didn't feel bothered by it at all.
All right.
I've been a registered nurse since 1996. And healing, as you know, is a big part of health care. So I know a lot about mental and physical healing, as long as in my personal life. About 10 years ago, I suffered from depression, so we'll get into that later on. The Heal Network, H-E-A-L, stands for Helping, Empowering, and Advancing Lives, which I do through community programs for children and for seniors, which benefits families.
Okay.
Heal, what we do, we build after-school programs for kids. Our focus is a very different, innovative way. We use performing, creative, and visual arts for our children to learn through. We do focus on science, technology, English, and math, but we do it through different types of creative ways and performing arts. We do basketball programs in the community, and 100% of our programs are free. So we rely heavily on other organizations that have helped us, like through DYCD, Department of Youth and Community Development, where they will pay the kids to work in my programs. They will pay the interns to work in my programs. Like, they had a whole entire high school of interns. They paid them to come and tutor the children, to create performances for the children. The basketball program, my basketball program, the director is former NBA player Gordon Malone. He's from the Timberwolves. He's our basketball director. And that's one way we help out in the community. And then when you're helping out, you get to understand other dynamics or issues that affect children that we also try to help families with. Our senior programs that we do, the same thing. We get our interns who ages range from like 17 to 24. These are usually students that's going back to school to try and get their high school diploma or participate in some type of vocational internship to just try and get back on track. And then they repay, like, the they get paid to come and help me go clean seniors' houses, go pick up their prescriptions, go cook for them, go clean for them, and just to keep them company. A lot of seniors are home alone. HRA has cut so many services for our seniors. It's unbelievable. I had one senior. She took a really long time to answer the door. When she did open the door, she was on the floor. She can't walk, so she had to drag herself on her stomach to open the door. So a senior like that, we would provide services like daily cooking, housekeeping, helping her with assistance with bathing, and just activities we call daily living, and for free. So that's what we've been engaged in.
Heal is doing is vital and a necessary is a necessary contribution to our community, especially as you just described our senior population. So
with
that,
how
long has your organization been in existence, and what personal experiences caused you or provoked you to found Heal?
The personal experience that caused me to find Heal is being Black.
Okay.
Lack of services for our youth, for our younger children, for our seniors. You see every day a lot of our children getting killed daily, shot down. If they're not getting shot down, they are unnecessarily getting stopped and frisked. Yeah, they may be hanging out on the corners unnecessarily. Where else can they go? Where are the community centers to help them? Where are the after-school programs to help them? I'm 36, going on 37. And when I was growing up, we had, it wasn't no dynamic programs, but it was after-school programs that helped us, kept us entertained, and kept us out of trouble, you know.
Yeah, like how I described on other shows before, and Mark and I, we've discussed this at length, both on and offline. The Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, where are they?
Thank you.
Know,
I started the
Church
Boy Scouts of America.
Brooklyn is the borough of churches. And I don't really hear about too many outreach programs with the churches. I know I'm probably going to get some calls and some emails.
No, the churches need
the church
to be more effective.
Stand up and let us
well,
know
you
that you
are definitely
out.
Right. You are definitely right, Bree. The churches need to come out more, and it's because they do have a lot of perks as being a church. They do have the location. I've had church organizations. I have the operator out of schools. And when I had tried to operate out of a church, they wanted to charge me like $6,000 a month rent to do youth programs there. $6,000 a month rent in the hood to do youth programs.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm going to turn it over to Red. I'm going to ask you if you have any questions for Aaliyah, and also our guest co-host tonight, Mark. Being that his background is in social work, I felt it was vital for him to participate in our dialogue tonight. Mark, also please feel free to chime in at any point if there's a question for any of our panelists that you'd like to ask.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Red, you was totally right about HRA, how they usually treat people.
I've had hospitals
close down on me and had to go get assistance, and been treated in the most dirtiest, nastiest ways. I've been a nurse at St. Mary's, St. John's, most of the hospitals, St. Vincent's, most of the hospitals that closed down and had to go for assistance and been. You don't even want to go into them places. I'd rather starve.
and that's what feels so unfortunate. That's why I was saying that I'm so happy that there is people like Miss Barry. I wish I could have encountered them, but I didn't. You know,
they don't really hardly ever exist.
That's what
really bothers me. I just wanted to take this moment because as a nursing professional, we can never treat clients that come into the hospital degradingly, disrespectfully. You could lose your nursing license and you
lose
your
license
immediately.
Immediately. Because it's considered
I've never seen social services. I've been spit on before by an older woman. She told me she didn't want to take her meds. I told her she needed them. She took the meds and she spit them back out on me. She said, I told you I didn't want them. I had to wipe my face and walk away. It's like we can get sued for the type of behavior that you see carried out in the social services, and they can be sued too. That's one thing a lot of us people, we don't know. That's what I was explaining to Bree earlier when we were talking, like fuss and like go off and, and try to fight and attack because you're being hurt and you're being violated.
Exactly.
But there's a lot of ways that you can get back at them. And 311, people need to start using that service. It's a great service for reported abuse and violations when going for help because now is not the time. It's too many people, white, black, Jewish. Everybody is going through something, losing things.
Absolutely.
And when you're walking into those places, a lot of times I feel like I'm an enemy. Like, what did I do? I just lost my job. I'm sorry.
It's true. So
I'd like to give the opportunity to Barry to comment on what Aaliyah has just said about, some of the specialists at the HRA. We know that she's not one of them, but I mean, Barry, what do you think about the disdain that a lot of people have for some of the specialists?
Well, in my 25 years, I've been in Greenwood, Fulton, Easton, Bushwick. Four centers in 25
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that there are some not so nice workers, but I don't agree that the whole, and sometimes people paint the whole Department of Social Services, the workers, as being nasty.
Mm-hmm.
You might have had one who might have had a bad day and just took it out on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody on that day was nasty.
They need
nobody,
to put cameras
everybody.
In there.
They can, but let me ask
they need
you,
to put cameras in there.
I've been with
assisted people. No disrespect. I have had to call the director of HRA and the deputy directors for just disregard and the disrespect on multiple bases. I've sat there with my grandmother, my mother. I've been there a few times myself, like I mentioned, all of the hospitals that I've worked for, that I've been laid off for. So I've been in there a few times, and I've never not encountered, and I'm a bubbly type of person. And like I said, being a healthcare professional.
Did you go
I usually call 311, and they take care of it.
Mm-hmm. But I'm saying the day you went. Like, you had the nasty worker. Did you go up the ladder, like, to report the worker to the supervisor?
I was at one particular situation happened at Bergen Street. I was applying for some food stamps after being laid off,
mm-hmm.
and the worker was horrendous. And then when I asked for her manager, she came out with the ghetto girl attitude, too.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to call 311. They connected
okay.
me to, like, an HRA constituent
yes,
office. And then
yes,
everything got done. But it's like you had to
mm-hmm.
had to leave out the building, call, explain the type of disgusting treatment that I was getting. And this happened a couple of years ago, but as a result, that's what I want to talk about with healing. Like, sometimes you just got to hold on, because after I left that place, like, early 2010, like, a couple of months later, like, we won a couple of $1 million in a settlement that we didn't even know that was coming out of nowhere. This was a lawsuit we had filed, like, 10 years ago.
Wow.
So that's what I want to talk about, healing. You got to really always trust and believe in God. I'm telling you, after leaving that HRA center, being treated so dirtily and disgustedly, didn't even go back. I didn't care if they gave me anything or not, but the 311 mm-hmm. people did help me. They did give me food stamps at the time after losing my job. And then
mm-hmm.
that was like early in the year, and I'm telling you, I just went to a praise and a good surrounding myself with positive people, and any type of doubt or discouragement or devilish type of thing, I attributed to the devil and eradicated out of my mind. Started attending church more regularly to surround myself with allegedly positive people, you know, allegedly. And out of nowhere, the lawyer called us up for a lawsuit I filed in 2000 for my son
wow.
getting hurt. And he got thrown out of court in 2007. I didn't even know we won the appeal, because that's the last time I spoke to the lawyer was in 2007 and told us that they wanted to settle with us.
Wow.
And,
so
yeah.
Let me ask you, are there any HEAL or non-HEAL related projects that you're working on? And if so, what are they?
Well, I'm 8 months pregnant, right?
Congratulations.
So thank you. And I'm going to continue with the youth program and the senior program, pushing that more. But what I do notice, my passion may not be as strong as the people. Like, I've been paying people, have people on payroll, and things haven't been going the way that I envisioned. You know, everybody doesn't have the same passion. So I took a
mm-hmm.
with my pregnancy also, I'm taking a break. We're only doing, like, health fairs and things like that now. But I'm continuing to build the youth programs.
Mm-hmm.
I do write books. I'm working on another book. I really want to push my book career. But I really want to be an advocate for our community. So after this baby, I'm going to law school, because I'm tired of seeing the social injustices and the unfairness that break our people. That's why we need so much healing in the first place.
That's very admirable. And I'm sure that you'll be successful as a lawyer, just knowing you as I do thus far. You will be successful. Red, did you want to ask Aaliyah anything?
Well, she already answered the question I was going to ask, what do she have in store for the future of the program? But now that I know she's pregnant, now I know sort of like pretty much specialty event type things that you're doing at this point?
Yes, that's what we're currently doing now. And it's not even that. One of the situations, the honest situation, the school that we was operating out of, another school came into the building and we started losing all the space and the programs for our kids. So I had a building donated to me recently. So off of the sale of that building, I just want to buy my own space. And so we've been pushed around from school to school to school for issues out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know the new school that came in, the Jewish man, they have to call him headmaster. Yes.
Okay. What?
Yes.
Well,
so we had a basketball program there, free to the community, free to the children in school every day. And because headmaster wanted the gym for no purpose, just for kids to just be put down there unattended, no guidance, we was fighting over the gym, and we lost the gym. Out of nowhere, a building got donated to me. Like I said, power of positive thinking, the power of prayer, that's where healing comes from. And I want to just take the proceeds from that building and get our own location. And I also wanted to talk to that HRA woman also, because we got another building donated, and we wanted to help people that were traumatized by this hurricane. If they needed, like, some place to stay. It's a three-family home rented out to you guys. It's a nice home in Bushwick, and you know, get people more normalized. I've almost been in shelter situations before. I've been in a domestic situation. I'm from Brooklyn. I've been through about everything.
You tell to the hot, the big leagues of HRA regarding that.
Well, what we're gonna do is we're gonna take a station break. We're gonna come back with our friend that's been quite patiently, Diana Alley. She is a community and domestic violence advocate, and I want to bring
Diana.
We're also going to bring Mark back into the dialogue, and I would like you both to stay because as we're in our second hour, there's a caller from 347-424. That I'm going to bring on right after the commercial break before I bring Diana on, because I believe they might have a question for the panel. I feel that in our second hour, we need to talk about the healing and forgiveness that is associated. Once we in the process of healing, we also got to acknowledge that there is something that we're healing from. Usually is some type of dysfunction in our lives, in our relationships with our family members, with our partner. So I want to discuss that in our second hour. I also want to encourage those who are on the line to understand that we're on until 11 p.m., but if you call in, if you instead of listening on the Internet, if you want to continue to listen to our dialogue, because we will be going over tonight, call in to 424-220-1862, and you can continue to listen to our discussion. So we will be back in just a moment.
It is very common to hear people use the phrase, "I'm going to be me, 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 me. I'm not changing for anybody." And they use that phrase a lot of times to suggest that nothing's wrong with them and they're fine with being who they are. But here's a question. What happens when being you leaves you with only you? You know, like, you're acting the way you act and people leave the room.
You lose two or three friends at a time.
You talk to the mirror more than you talk to your best friend.
You take long walks in the park holding your own hand.
My suggestion is, don't change. Don't change.
Don't change.
because, after all, you like being you. Now, here's some problems with being you. Not considering you may end up walking through the room holding your own hand by yourself. But that's okay, because guess what? You're still being you. So, if you're liking it, I'm loving it. And remember, don't stop being you.
Don't you change, baby.
Not for anybody. Even yourself. This has been Mark Said It in Under a Minute.
And we're back. I'm Bree, and you've reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and tonight we are discussing healing for the holidays. In our discussion for the first hour, as you've probably all heard, we've been talking with Barry Schneider, the Assistant Deputy Director of the Human Resources Administration. We've been joined with Leah Holland, who is an author. She is also the founder and program director of a program called HEAL. And, of course, our brother at arms, Mark in Houston, Texas, who has a background in social work. Shortly, we'll be joined with Diana Alley. But before we do that, and, of course, I cannot forget my sister, Red Sable, Red Hot Fire Sable. But what we're going to do is we're going to take our caller from the 347-424 area code, and then also there's a caller dialing in from 646. I'm just letting you know that I am acknowledging you, and I'll bring you on in just a moment. But first, our caller from 347-424.
Good evening.
Blessings.
How are you, Bree? This is Kenneth Chamberlain Jr. How are you?
Peace and blessings, Brother Kenneth. I am so glad that you can. And I've been waiting months and months for you to participate on the Bree Life Radio Show. How are you?
I'm okay. I like to give my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I try to do it. That's why, you know, when you sent me the message on Facebook, I said that I would definitely try to call in, even if it's for a quick few minutes. But
okay. Well,
I wanted to call in.
Well, I thank you for participating, and I want you, for our listening audience and for our panel, just to introduce yourself. And I personally have been following your cause. It's one that's very close to my heart. I know how you feel about your dad. I have a dad that I was very close to, too. I did not lose him the way you lost your father. So just please, for our listening audience, if you could just share some words about him, who you are, and the cause that you have spearheaded on his behalf.
Okay. Well, again, my name is Kenneth Chamberlain Jr. For those of you who don't know me, my father was Kenneth Chamberlain Sr. Last year, November 2011, suffered from a heart condition, and COPD accidentally triggered his life aid pendant. And when the police, just to make a long story short, when the police responded to his home, they asked him to open the door. He refused to open the door. They ultimately broke the door down. They fired a taser at him, beanbag shotgun, and then they shot and killed him. But not before mocking him, taunting him, using racial slurs. And since that has happened, I have been on the forefront of this fight to get justice for my father. But I've watched it grow, where I understand that it's not only about getting justice for my dad, it's about getting justice for other people as well, because I guess maybe some people will say that I'm trying to put together the blueprint on how to fight injustice, but I'm here, and it's interesting that your topic is about forgiveness, because at this point in time, although I know that it's more for myself, because I also am in the human services field, I am a behavior counselor, but at this point in time, me really forgiving somebody, very hard to do right now, especially as we approach the 1 year anniversary of my father's murder. So I guess right now, all I really try to do.
That happened around the holidays. I'm sorry for interrupting. Did that happen during this time of the year?
Yes, November 19th.
Mm.
Wow.
My condolences. That is a horrendous story. It's horrifying.
Yeah. I have people say to me, you know, well, what would happen if you come face to face with the officer that shot and killed your father? I honestly say I don't know. I mean, I try not to do what they would believe I would do, and I think that one of the reasons that I've been so successful is that I've fought on their ground. One of the things that I've told them from the very beginning is the difference with me and other people that you've done this to is I am an intelligent black man, and you're not just going to do whatever you want to do to me. And I think that kind of hit them so hard because their only response was an expletive after that. They couldn't say anything else, which only leads me to believe that, you know, they knew they were in for a problem with me.
Right, because knowledge is power, and that's something I tell my kids all the time. They're in their early 20s, and I tell them all the time, you don't, sometimes the greatest weapon that you have is your knowledge of how to get to that person. Not your hands, not the screaming and yelling, not no weapons, it's the knowledge. And when they realize that they are dealing with an intelligent person, then they have no other recourse but to behave accordingly. That's they have to. They have no choice to do that. So I wish you well with that. That is amazing. I couldn't imagine of all the things that I've been through in my lifetime what I would do if someone actually murdered someone that I loved. I just, that's amazing to me. So
well, and that's a perfect segue to my next question to Kenneth. How are you doing? And what are your daily coping mechanisms? Because to lose your father in such an unjust way, such a violent way, this is what we talk about when, and you being a behavioral specialist, you understand this term, coping with trauma.
Yeah.
How are you coping with your trauma?
I will be very... Do I think that I'm coping with it the best that I could? I don't really think so. I think one thing that keeps me right, my family, me. Every family always has that one person who is the strong one in the family, who everybody always looks for or looks at.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people a lot of times is, you know, if I go to sleep, because I don't really sleep at night, I'm up constantly, my brain doesn't shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And before I walk out the door, if I'm going to shed any tears or anything, I do. And I just put a game face on and I go out the door. I mean, I'm working full time. I'm being with my children. I am doing legal stuff. And I'm also back in school because I'm trying to get my master's in forensic psychology. So I just...
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry, you're chopping up.
I'm just saying that I would just have to say that just keeping myself busy is my coping mechanism.
Okay.
And you certainly keeping yourself busy in a productive manner that, you know, just is not helping people at large, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Which you realize that this the fight is about too. But you are definitely honoring your father's memory, you know. And we had the Bree Life Radio show, and me personally, I just want to tell you, I mean, you know, the first time I found out who you were and found out what your cause was about, I reached out to you and, you know, I told you I love you, and I didn't even know you because you are my brother, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just want you to know that we are with you in your struggle, your daily struggle to deal with, you know, your loss and you know, whatever we could do here at the show, I'll be glad to participate in anything that, you know, will help rally support for your cause.
And I appreciate that.
Keeping your word and coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. Especially how I know you live here in the city also. How did you and your family deal with the storm?
Well, you know, believe it or not, my power just came back on today. So I guess I was supposed to call it.
That's right. That's nothing but God.
It came on. So, you know, so I said, you know what, I gave my word that I was going to do that. And I definitely come from that school of thought where your word is your bond. And
absolutely.
If you say you're going to do something, you know, barring any unforeseen, you
yep.
do your best to keep that word and do what you say you were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yes, you know, my mom has no power. I can't get her out of the house. She won't come over to my house. I tried, you know, she's just setting her ways. I just said, Ma, let me take you over to my house until your lights come on. No, I'm good here. So I just make sure that the food is okay, that she has some of the battery-powered lamps and things in the house, and she's okay.
Well,
right.
I want you, if you could just hang with us maybe 5 or 10 more minutes, I want to bring Diana Alley on the line because she has a similar story to yours, Kenneth. Diana Alley is a community and domestic violence advocate. She also comes from a background of social work, and she also has a personal story that she wants to share with us tonight because it's a part of healing for the holidays, something that is, and dealing with the trauma of a loss that she suffered from. So we're going to bring our sister Diana on. Peace and blessings, Diana, and thank you for being so patient and to participate in the Bree Life Radio Show.
Thank you. Thank you, Bree. My name is Diana Alley, and Kenneth, I'm so sorry what you're going through, but this is about healing for the holidays. And I wanted to say to you, when she contacted me last night, I knew I had to come on and tell my story. My son, in 2010, went out to a club and he got stabbed, trying to help a friend. And forgiveness, I don't have forgiveness. I'm trying to work on it. But I was able to find the person that stabbed my son, who's incarcerated right now. And I went up to the Maximac prison and met with him because I wanted answers for my son. And I wanted justice. And it's been 2 years, and I'm not getting justice. I'm just getting the runaround because this was a guy who was out and was not supposed to be out. He was a criminal that was out on probation or some sort for a burglary. And he had a plan, and he knew exactly what he was going to do that night. Unfortunately, my son was in the wrong place at the wrong time, according to the detective. The case is still pending, but I had to face the killer, and I asked him why. Why? And, of course, when they're in jail, they learn to say, I didn't do it. I didn't know your son. I don't remember. And so I went back home, you know, knowing, you know, that this is a person who's not going to admit anything to me. And looking at me in my face, I was hoping some reason or another he was going to say, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. I was just looking for some answers, but it wasn't coming out of a murderer's mouth. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and I taught my son to live out in a non-violent atmosphere. So my mm-hmm. son would have never known to carry a pack, anything going out. He just knew he wanted to break the cycle. I live with it, but at the same time, I try to help other communities on stopping the violence in any community. I just worked with Mayor Hall in the Hempstead community, doing a rally and speaking out to parents about children and parents who lost their kids. You know, and mm-hmm. the pain of a mother. There's a pain that's there
mm-hmm.
that does not heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I do for my healing process is to go out and try to do as much community outreach and speak out for parents who lost children at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Diana, also, if you could share with our listeners and our panel, one other thing that you told me this afternoon that, you know, just kind of choked me up, that you do for your son every year, because his anniversary is coming along
yes.
too.
Well, every year I want my son memories. He was a good kid, and he liked basketball. So every year his friends would get together and do a little basketball tournament, and they would have a big trophy, and they would give it to the winner. But at the same time, as well as my son dying, his best friend died with him at the same time. His best friend had did his wake and got on a motorcycle and was leaving the first day of the wake, and someone ran his light and knocked him off a motorcycle, and he as well died. So there was two deaths. Of two young men, 26 years old, and so what I do to keep my son alive is I do T-shirts, I do his birthday, I do a memorial service for his birthday, I do the balloon release, and I invite anyone who wants to come up with it on Facebook. Everything I do, and I invite everyone, is on Facebook or wherever, word of mouth. I do a ceremony, and I want to do a Stop the Violence against our young people.
Yes.
So I basically...
I'm with you.
Couple of dollars, and I just want to speak out, and we remember him being with us. And that's what keeps me, that's what heals me, because my son is not here. Huh?
I'm sorry, where are you located?
I'm located... my son was killed in Queens. I had to leave Queens County and move into Nassau County because of domestic issues. But
yeah.
I never abandoned my son. I was always back and forth from Queens to Long Island, Long Island to Queens, because three of my children live in Queens County and two of them live with me in Nassau.
Okay.
I'm a family resource coordinator in Nassau County dealing with children.
And can you tell us what exactly a family resource counselor actually does?
A family coordinator does wraparound services for families. I work with the court system. We work with the mental health system, any systems of care that the family has in their life. And we wrap around all the services that the family has to make one plan for them. Most of our families have mental health issues, so I'm really working more with the mental health part. And, you know, it's the family's plan. We don't want to make plans for family. We want the families to make their own plan, because that's the only way it will work.
That's interesting that you say that you provide services for an entire family that is suffering from mental health issues. That's something
yeah.
that I think we as people don't really take into consideration. That sometimes when there is one person in the household that might clearly be defined and identified as having mental challenges, it's not just them. It could also be the people who are around them who are getting the trickle-down effect of what that individual is going through.
Right, because we look at the underlining problems went down with the families when a very young part of their life, that they had never addressed. So I first talk with the families. I speak with the parents. We have a youth advocate that speak with the child. We bring them together, and then we get the whole dynamic of the family, whereas they have 10 dynamics of their life there. They have issues. So it might be, it could be a housing issues, it could be a social issue, it could be whatever issues they're having challenges with. We bring it together and let's find out what's the core that's bothering the families, and let's work with that. If that's what the family works want us to work on, that's what I work on. Now, I don't put things in there and say, well, you must do this. It's what the family wants to work on. Because if the family's in control of their plan, they were more likely to follow through instead of someone saying, you better do this or else, you know?
Well, what I'd like to do at this moment, because this is a very rare thing that happens here on the Bree Life Radio Show, I want to identify that Mark has been very quiet. So I want to ask Mark, you know, being a fellow person who has worked in social work, is there any questions that he'd like to direct towards Kenneth or Diana? Mark?
I think Mark is gone.
Okay. Mark? I think he may be gone.
It sounds like someone's traveling.
Well, then what we're going to do now, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to have more discussions. We're going to specifically talk since we're in our second hour and we're in our last half hour of the show being aired, even though we're going to go into overtime with Bree. I want to talk about the forgiveness and the healing, because we haven't really discussed that enough. I know that Kenneth has his own particular feelings on that. I want to expand on that maybe a little bit more without being too invasive. And Diana, you also said something similar to Kenneth about struggling with the forgiveness part. So I want us to examine that as we are in our last half hour of the Bree Life Radio Show. So we're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Bree Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Bree Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Bree Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at BreeLife.evenbright.com. That's BRIELIFE.EVENBRITE.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the Bree Life Radio Show. Our topic tonight is healing for the holidays. We're talking with, I have a great panel of participants tonight. We have Aaliyah Holland from HEAL. We have Barry Schneider, who is the assistant deputy director of the Human Resources Administration here in New York. We have Kenneth Chamberlain Jr. We have Diana Ali. And we're joined with my co-host and sister-at-arms, Red Stable, Mark in Houston, yeah. Texas. He's somewhere out there in the atmosphere. I know he's there. And also I want to acknowledge our caller's Q. I know we have our brother Alvin. I'll be picking him up in a moment. And here's a caller that I haven't seen in quite some time, but I love her dearly. Turtle, girl Gail, and
I don't know Larry. Do I think?
Yeah, Minneapolis. So, Mark, are you there? Okay.
Yeah.
Mark is still traveling or missing in action. So, as I said before we went to our commercial break, I wanted to expand a little bit more on the process of forgiving. And, you know, dealing with my own personal challenges, my coping with my traumas, it's no secret, especially after last week when I spoke at a domestic violence workshop, that I have been a victim I have to get my terminology more
informed.
I am a survivor of domestic violence, and I have been a survivor for several years now. There are trauma. It's traumatic. Having been exposed to it, and there are triggers, like you said, read earlier, that certain sounds, certain things remind you of the trauma that one might have experienced. And more specifically, because a lot of the trauma that I was subject to, I was subject to it around this time of the year. And this is one of the reasons why I felt it was necessary to have dialogue, you know, because dealing with the trauma of loss of a person that you love, whether it was in a violent manner or just because of health reasons, and then also dealing with other personal traumas all at one time, like the ending of a marriage and being a survivor of the domestic violence. There's so many variables there at one time that we all deal with. And how do we move on and forgive?
Different types of traumas.
How does one do that? And I want to direct that question, since Diana was the last person that came on the panel. I know that you specifically said, Diana, that right now you are just learning how to forgive. So when did that process necessarily start for you? And what are your mechanisms that you are exercising to continue to foster the forgiveness?
Well, first thing I had to do is I was working in the mental health programs, and I was a counselor myself to families. But what I found out, that I wasn't healed. I went right back to work. My son died on November 14, 2010.
Oh, wow.
I went back to work in January 1st, and I thought I could have handled work and everything else that goes along with the everyday life. But what happens when you don't address those parts of your life, it will come back to haunt you. So I started getting to me, and what I did was got myself into counseling, which is I had to get into. Not was I in domestic violence counseling. You have to get the right counselor to deal with the issues. I was dealing with domestic violence issues, but I wasn't dealing with my grief for my son. I got myself back into counseling this year. And what they had said to me, that I have to, if I am angry and mad, I should not put on the face and go out there and act like everything is fine, because it's not fine. So I had to keep it in the moment and address everything, the underlying issues, if it's domestic violence, if it is the hurt of my child, if it was a broken marriage. Those are the things that I was just bottling up, and I did not address it. So now I express myself, And I, whatever makes me feel sad or mad, I say it. I just recently faced my abuser, and I had to tell him what I felt about him for years. I mean, this was my first abuser, and I never said anything about it to him. I just see, you know, years go by. My oldest is 30. I have a 24 year still with my first abuser, but you know what? Sometimes you have to let go and release. That I got out of the way. As of November 14, it's going to be my son's 2 year anniversary, and I'm going to do his 2 year memorial, and I'm going to make what it is positive, not negative. Those are the things that healed me, and I move forward. But I need to address everything that's happening to me right now. We have to raise children. We still have to get up and pay the bills, you know. But self-healing, you have to self-heal before you move forward.
Yes.
So
okay.
I keep it in moment. I keep it. I live in the moment right now. What I feel is how I get up, and I say how I feel every day.
Okay. Well, you know, now I want to turn it over to Kenneth, because his work for the movement on behalf of his. Oh my goodness, what was that?
Wow, what is that?
The sink. Okay. Okay. Again, Kenneth, the work that you're doing on behalf of the organization that you spearheaded in remembrance of your father and the crime that was exercised against him. I heard you earlier saying that you're not ready to give. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I guess what I felt, better yet, I'll give you one example. Someone said to me one day, they said, I look at the quote that you put on your Facebook page. You have to put those up there. And I said, well, why not? Do they bother you? They said, well, I think maybe you're giving people too much information. I said, I'm not giving people too much information. I'm just putting down what it is that I'm feeling at that time. It's a way for me to release rather than just keep it boxed up. And they went on and tried to justify why I shouldn't do it. And then finally I just simply said to them, I said, well, I understand that a heart surgeon doesn't have to have had heart surgery performed on them. Be a good had some family members. Have you looked at this, one of your last visions of someone you love, their eyes wide open and tongue hanging out their mouth with a bullet hole in their chest? You know, and I said, if you haven't, how can you talk or what's inappropriate in terms of me trying to look the police officer face that he killed my father? The city of White Plains continues to hold incident up and try to justify the actions of the officers, implying that they've used all non-lethal before having the result to deadly physical force.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, please.
People will tell you different ways how you should deal with your healing, but like I said, healing, what are you healing from? A murdered father, a murdered son, relationships. It depends, I think, on the dynamic of what you're dealing with, and then you can say how you can heal. I think it'll be very hard for me to heal. I have two sons and one in my belly if one of my sons was murdered, you know. And I remember at the hospital that I worked at, they lost my dad and he died. and it bothered me. I said, and happy when it closed down. I missed the $58 an hour, but I was kind of happy because I felt they were incompetent and they didn't need to function. And even though I wasn't the cause of the hospital closing down, I was happy because now they wouldn't lose other patients. Yeah, my father got lost in the hospital that I worked at and died.
Mm-hmm.
St. Vincent. So, you know, people could tell you how you should deal with it, how you should express it. As long as you're not being violent and you're not hurting anyone, I feel you have to cope the best way you cope. Until you walk in someone's shoes, what they feel, you know. I'm sure dealing with the police, he had to go through his father being defamed, his father being defamed, and them justifying their actions for shooting us down and hurting us, which we, as a people, like I said, especially of color, we do have a black agenda. It's a lot of other things. Like, we got to heal the social service systems. We got to heal, like, the police departments, because those type of agencies impact our lives, you know.
Only right.
And here with everything we already going through, being a mother, trying to be successful, trying to put your best foot forward, and just facing unforeseeable hurricanes, unforeseeable challenges. For me, the way I heal, I talk to God about everything. That's my healing. I talk to God about everything. Every time I think of a negative thought, I say that's the devil, and I try to zap it out, put on my spiritual music, go to my different collection of gospel music. Every time I think of discouragement, every time I think of something that begins with D, devious, someone trying to defame me, someone trying to be deceptive, discouragement, like I said, I say those are all the devil, and I try to just block it out and knock it out. I never try to relive in the past. I always try to just pray and move forward. And honestly, I suffered from depression after being violated by a law enforcement officer in 2002, and I went through like an 18-month bout of depression. And I, ever since then, like I said, knowing who I am, I don't look for validations from humans ever, ever. I don't look.
That's very good that you would say that.
Yeah, you.
Kenneth, you wanted to say something? As we are approaching 5 minutes before we have to end the show, I just want to do a couple of things. I want to remind our listeners that they can continue in overtime with Bree by dialing in 424-220-1862, because at exactly 11 o'clock, the recording is going to end. You will not be able to, we will not be streaming over the internet. You will have to be on the call in order to continue to be a part of the dialogue. I want to thank all of our participants tonight for calling in and just, you know, sharing with us personal and professional situations that are very synonymous with the topic, which is healing for the holidays. In the last 5 minutes of our discussion, there's an item that we did not discuss that is very personal to me. And that is the anxiety that we go through. And I think Mark in Houston, Texas, he kind of touched on it a little bit when he was describing the issues that some people feel, or the anxiety that some people feel in trying to attain material things during this time of year. And I don't feel that type of anxiety. It's the anxiety of knowing that I might have to encounter family during this time of the year, and being around family that I will particularly like. I want to go on the record and say,
don't put myself in environments I don't like.
There
I'm
are.
From a
Sorry?
I said,
hello?
I wouldn't put myself in environments that I made me feel uncomfortable. I would avoid them, and I would love my family from a distance.
Okay, and that's what I have done, or I have chosen to distance myself because I don't want to be, I don't particularly enjoy the holidays anymore because my father's not here. And I know that that may seem like long-term sadness. I just don't, I don't like the holidays, and I don't like sitting and having turkey and macaroni and cheese and all that stuff on Thanksgiving and Christmas. I, as a matter of fact, I do the polar opposite. I have lobster tails and crab legs, and I don't watch Christmas movies. I don't listen to Christmas music, and some family members, my mother in particular, she is dismayed with me because she knows this is the time of the year that I usually retreat. I don't want to be bothered. And I kind of feel a level of guilt because my mother's not young. She, you know, she's in her 70s. And, you know, God forbid something happens to her. I don't want our last argument to be about the fact that I wouldn't participate in Christmas dinner or I wouldn't participate in Thanksgiving dinner. And then there are those of my family members or people that I'm related to that I have cut off completely because they are disruptive. They're toxic. And, you know, I felt a level of anxiety about it for many years. So I just want to hear from my panel, you know, have you ever experienced anything similar? And if so, what was your place of closure and accept, or acceptance and closure that you came to in order to move on and move away from the anxiety that some of us feel pressure about?
Bree, I can answer that question. Last year, my son who had passed away, I had to do this phony big celebration because that is what my son loved, but no more. I am not doing it this year. I refuse to do it, to be the front, and I'm going to listen to my therapist. What I feel is what I will be doing from now on. So I did it for 1 year, and I'm not going to do it the second year. The second year, I don't like these people. I don't care for these people. I will surround myself with the people I care for and the one I really loves me and I care about, but I will not put up a front anymore. You know, and my son, he's rest in peace, and I don't think I have to do it to prove a point anymore.
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Kenneth, how do you feel about the holidays? Kenneth? Okay, Kenneth's not with us. Ms. Barry, you work in this industry. And you work in the social services industry, and you deal with this time of the year, which is very challenging for many.
Yes.
But personally, what do you do to kind of decompress from that? Because when after having dealt with and doing it for 25 years, but having had to deal with it, and then when you come home, what kind of decompression from that do you do?
Well, just come home and I just sit down and absorb my day. But I'm 24 years in the center. Right now, I consider I'm having a break.
Okay.
So I'm not in the center right now. So
That's good.
I'm breathing.
That's good. That's very good. Red.
So, yeah, I was going to say, because remember I was telling you earlier in the conversation we were doing our open dialogue, that there are certain things that trigger things. And so when the stories were being told, I started remembering some things that I probably choose to forget because that's how I cope. And it's not that I've completely forgotten them on purpose. It's just that that's how I cope. That's just how I do. The last time I saw my aunt was when I had to go and view her body in the morgue. So every time this time of year comes around, I don't want to remember that the last time I saw her was in a box in Bronx Lebanon Hospital, folded up like a baby doll. I remember. I don't. You know. So it's just really hard to tell someone else how to cope or how to figure out a way on how they're going to go through their own journey of healing and forgiveness, because you're still trying to make your way through your own. When I was hearing this story about the woman, and I'm sorry, I'm not forgetting your name on purpose, but it's escaping me for the moment, about the killing of your son, I remember that.
And so
my
I have
son,
to interject and remind someone has both their either phone and their computer in the same area. If you're listening to the computer and on the phone at the same time, could you lower the volume on the computer, because we're getting feedback?
Yeah. So
okay.
It just brought me back to, no, my son wasn't killed, but when he was 17 years old, he was walking home from a football game and was jumped in the middle of the street and passed out and was left for dead. And had it not been for some pedestrians, by the grace of God, picked him up off the ground and put him in a cab and sent him home, my son probably would have died that day. So there are certain things that you go through life and you realize, oh, wow, someone just said something that reminded me of something that I completely forgot about. And so as I was hearing these stories, I also came up with, I was listening to Yala Van Zandt the other day, and she said the process of forgiveness is a gift to yourself, not to the one that hurt you. So we have to try to figure out a way how to forgive the other person in order to gift ourselves the life of being able to breathe and function and heal on our own without having to run around and walk around with this guilt, this anger, and this pain. And I still have not figured out how she did it, because I'm still trying to work through my own processing of elimination, and because there's been so many different hurdles that I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to go through mine. So it's really difficult to tell someone else, okay, well, this is what you should do, because we're all still healing. We are all still healing. And we're going to all continue to still heal.
Well, we're going to heal together. That's what Bree Life Radio is all about. We inhale and breathe life, and we're going to do it together as a community at large. Having said that, I would like to invite my brother on the line, Alvin, who's been so patient and so supportive of the Bree Life Radio Show. He's wonderful. Alvin, do you have any words for our panelists or anything that you want to share with the listeners?
I want to say good evening and peace and blessings to everyone. And, yeah, I was listening all the way through, and, you know, I really don't have the words, but, you know, I do have, you know, my condolences to the brother and the sister who lost, you know, for the losses they've endured, because I can't imagine, and I can't, you know, it's, you know, I could sit here and whine about my problems all day, but what I've listened to tonight shows me that my problems or whatever I'm going through is real minimal. You know, and I want to say to you, Bree, that, you know, we need this show. You know, whatever it has to do to stay on, it needs to stay on, because this is something, you know, if I wasn't listening to this show, it wouldn't even be a thought. And I'm just saying that's why these forums, you know, they need to be addressed, because I would have never even, you know, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's really heartbreaking. And it's, you know, this is a real deep show tonight, and I'm like, wow, I'm really blown back from, you know, because it's hard. I know that's really tough, you know, that's really tough, and it's, wow, I'm kind of stuck, because I'm like, you know, just hearing about the, you know, just hearing what I'm hearing is like, oh, wow, you know, so that's really deep. That is really deep.
Well, there's, you know, when you're talking about loss and dysfunction and hurt and pain, and you're not getting a lot of support from your family, your friends, your community. You know, like the show topic yesterday on Relationship Extra was, I'm not the messenger. But you know what? That's not true. Just like we are our brother's keepers, we have a responsibility to listen to what's going on with our brother.
That's right.
And to offer up help and assistance in any way, shape, or form that we can. You know, we all can do something. It's not always about putting money on the table. It's about, you know, picking up a phone and saying, are you okay? Because
right.
That could be the difference in somebody taking their life, because usually a person who feels despaired and wants to take their life, they're usually thinking about doing it not just because they, well, mainly because they want attention. They crying out for help. And maybe when they was using their inside voice, like I like to say, nobody was paying attention. And they felt that they had to go to drastic means to get someone's attention. And that was that. This is also one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show. And I'm going to do a part two to this show because I feel it's very necessary. And from the response that I've gotten so far, just from listeners that have sent me emails and who have touched out to me on Facebook, it's clear that people other than myself are also thinking what the holiday is going to bring, especially, you know, we're facing an election that we're very uncertain about what the fate of that election is going to be, and it's going to affect all of us, you know, or how we vote. I'm not going to get in a political discussion right now because this is not the platform for that, but it does matter. So everyone should be voting, and we should be outreaching and encouraging everyone to vote. We also, you know, we're approaching the holidays, and a lot of people don't have money. Therefore, they're stressed out about what they can and cannot get their children because we as a society have commercialized this holiday, which is not supposed to, you know, it's not supposed to be about material things, but it has become a commercial event. So with having said all of that, I want to thank you all from the bottom of my heart participating tonight in this discussion, this very needed discussion. I would ask that you all be open for a part two sometime in the upcoming weeks, as I want to touch on, I think moving on into the upcoming weeks when we have a part two, I really want to talk about the mental health ramifications of what prevents us to be able to heal and forgive and all those things, and how domestic violence and a lot of other losses affects how we process and deal with this issue. So to Aaliyah, to Barry, to Diana, Kenneth, who's no longer on the line with us, Mark, who's lost in Houston, Texas somewhere, to all my listeners, I want to remind you all that tomorrow is the Freestyle Thursday, and which is our Throwback Thursday. We like to, you know, we follow up a heavy topic with inhaling and breathing light. So we have a lot of fun on Freestyle Thursday. I encourage you all to participate or listen, you know, via your phone or your iPad or your laptop. You can follow me on BreeLifeRadio@gmail.com, on Facebook at BreeLifeRadio, and at Twitter. So in closing, I want to thank my co-host, Red, for constantly a great support. And I just want to leave you with the words of peace and blessings. And I thank you all again, and I will be reaching out to you tomorrow.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so
good
much.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Peace.
Good night,